Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by RockAuto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
Welcome, everyone, to MotorWeek podcast number 86. And I am John Davis. Thank you for joining us. And in our Studio C today, we have four of our most talented contributors to the program. And then we have also producer, writer, and two-wheeling reporter Brian Robinson.
Thank you very much, John.
Our road test producer, Ben Davis.
Hello there.
Our writer, Patrick Lucas.
Checking in.
Our assistant producer, Greg Carlos.
Hey there.
And I've set myself up for something during this podcast. Okay, we'll have our lightning round and our MotorWeek mailbag in a few minutes. But first, we're going to tackle three vehicles that we've recently had time behind the wheel in. The Buick Encore, the GMC Sierra, their new full-size pickup truck, and the Acura MDX. Let's start with the Encore. And I preface this by saying on our previous podcast of this, we talked about the Mini Cooper Paceman, and of course the Countryman, which is their five-door small crossover. And the Encore is basically a five-door mini or compact crossover. It's designed to capitalize on the popularity of the larger Buick Enclave, but it's a very different package. And with that said, folks, let me throw it open for your evaluations.
Well, it does look just like the Enclave. It's like a mini version of it. And people keep telling us the subcompact luxury crossovers are the next big thing. There's a bunch of them coming. I guess people want the luxury. They want the SUV stance, but they want something small and more fuel efficient. So should be a lot of them coming. Up front, in the front seat, I mean, there's plenty of room. It felt midsize, but that left very little for the back seat or for storage. So
storage in particular.
Yeah, not the most practical of vehicles, but it looked good. Interior. It looked great until you start touching stuff. Then it was the disappointment started to creep in. But, you know, 1.4 liter i4. I'm not sure if it was the correct engine from the, what is it, the Sonic, the Chevy Sonic.
Mm-hmm. Nice. It's basically the same chassis.
Yeah, it's 130 horsepower, which.
You won't be passing anybody anytime soon.
But off the line, it was actually not bad. They have it geared, so it felt pretty energetic.
I didn't get too many chances to experience that. But,
well, you know, if you were at a stoplight and you hit the throttle, it felt like it had more power than it did.
Yeah.
You know, it let you down pretty quickly.
So it felt like 139 horsepower instead of 138.
You know, it'd be great. I know we talked about this weeks ago on the last podcast, but the Cruise diesel engine in there.
You know, you're right.
That
would be a monster, actually.
With a 400 pound diesel engine?
No. That was my mistake earlier. What is it?
264.
There you go. But 264 pound-feet of torque in that little beast would be impressive.
Wow. It would make it a little beast.
Now, I think that might be the wave of the future is small diesel-powered luxury compact crossovers.
That's interesting.
I think like most of these things that, you know, Buick's got there in their head that, you know, 20-somethings are just going to be knocking each other down to get to Buick and buy these things. But it's going to be older people that are empty nesters and, you know, they don't need all the room that they had before, but they still want something with a little luxury, and that's going to be who's going to buy them.
I think you're right about that.
And it's made in Korea, so it's going to be huge in the Asian market, which I'm sure they love Buicks. And
they sell a – GM already sells a Chevrolet version of this in Europe. And actually, the Encore is selling very, very well, apparently, here.
So. They should have brought it as a Chevy here. I might have liked it more.
Yeah, I asked the Chevrolet guy about that because it seems to me it would fit right under their Equinox, and he sort of got real stiff and didn't want to talk about it. But I wouldn't be surprised if down the way they don't do that.
Sure, it's GM they would love to sell six versions of the same vehicle, so I'm sure.
Let's face it, everybody would.
No mods.
All right, speaking of GM, let's move on to the second version of their new full-size pickup truck, the GMC Sierra. This, if you've been reading any of the truck news lately, you know the Silverado's all new. And sort of in the back, people start talking about the Sierra because it's always been, of course, a smaller volume brother to the Silverado. But in recent years, the Sierra has become more of the prestige truck. If you really want the luxury, you go over for the Sierra. Brian, you just came back from driving the new Sierra. Your impressions, is it different enough from the Silverado?
Much more positive comments in regards to this GM product. as before, all the mechanical bits are exactly the same as the Silverado. GMC gets its own grill, and they've done a few more trim things. It comes standard with like the HID upgraded headlights you have to get in Silverado. All the Sierras will have that. And there's some different trim around the fenders. The fender wells themselves have a, like, not really a carpeting, but like a soft material inside, whereas in the Silverado, it's all open in there. So
is
they
that
got
for sound
things.
Deadening, you think?
Probably. And for just looks as well. Help keep things cleaner under there. But just a statement on the light-duty pickup trucks in general, the market. I mean, it's insane if you look at the numbers compared to 10 years ago, what you can do with a light-duty pickup now. I mean, you can tow 12,000 pounds with this thing if you get the 6.2-liter V8. The smaller V8, the 5.3-liter, does 11.5 itself. And so that's best in class. Fuel economy is going to be best in class. Interior looks great. It's still got an industrial kind of feel to it. But it looks great. It drives great. Super capable. Now, compared to the F-150, which everyone will naturally do, I would definitely like the F-150's interior more. And I think the GM definitely rides better. And obviously, as the numbers are showing that, at least for now, it's more capable.
What about some of the new things on it that this, like the Silverado has them too, like the rear step bumpers, so you've got corner steps in the bumpers, right. And you've got...
They've had that stuff around. They had it on the original Avalanche, and then they did away with it. I'm not sure why. I mean, that's cool. I guess if you're constantly in and out of the bed, you would appreciate it.
Did you have a chance to experience the new safety seats that vibrate when you're...
Yeah, it's the Cadillac system, yeah, and it works. It's nice just for parking because instead of giving you an audible clue... when you're backing in into a parking space, or if you're pulling forward, you know, it'll vibrate your seat instead of beeping at you, and definitely come in handy.
Now, the big change on the body is that the extended cab version now has car-like doors instead of the old suicide doors that Ford will probably have to do away with next time they change, simply because the roof crush standards are changed.
Yeah, not only the way they open, they just open a lot wider, so it feels almost like a crew cab of a few years ago.
I guess I have a hard time understanding the luxury market for pickups, because to me that's sort of like not what they're supposed to be about. But about a third of them, I think, now go out the door for over 40 grand. Yeah. And they showed you the new Denali version.
Yeah, which they say 20% of their buyers opt for the Denali, which I was kind of surprised. But, I mean, to me it seems ridiculous that people are plunking down that kind of money on a pickup, but... I mean, they sell more and more, and people want more and more. There's new, they're constantly out trying more luxury versions coming out.
Yeah, Ford has both the King Ranch and the Titanium on the F-150. So.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that buy trucks solely for towing really expensive stuff.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So, that's where
people that show horses and stuff like that. And
race boats, race teams.
And not to mention, people just use them as, their daily vehicles. And, guys that own any type of business, they buy a 50 grand pickup truck and write it off on their taxes. I mean, it's not a problem.
Greg, you and Patrick are the newest members on our editorial staff, and you haven't had as much time in pickup trucks as the other guys. But, you're also younger. Do you get it? Do you get the desire for full-size pickups by Americans? I mean, it makes us pretty unique in the world in that.
I mean, I understand a full-size pickup. I don't understand a luxury full-size pickup, really.
Yeah, I'd have to agree.
I can appreciate the luxury, but
yeah,
I don't really get it. I just know that a lot of my friends, they're not really into buying the new stuff. They're into getting the old diesels and lifting them 6 inches and putting 40-inch tires and putting stacks on them.
Yeehaw!
Which, again, I do not understand, but it's just, I don't know. You see a lot of them, and I honestly think it's just going to keep getting more and more prevalent.
Right, there's probably a lot of young people in the Midwest and stuff that have never been in a car. They've probably just born in a pickup truck.
That's very true. I also wonder, we're going to see the first diesel in a light-duty pickup truck this fall with the Ram 1500s getting that same diesel that's in the Grand Cherokee. I wonder if that's going to start a trend.
GM definitely has something in the works there.
Yeah, they just haven't not ready to talk about it yet.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to a vehicle that Well, let me just say what it is, and we can talk about it. I think it's all left us a little scratching our heads. It's the new Acura MDX. If you look at it, and we've shown it twice on the show at the auto shows, both in concept and production form, it's very evolutionary looking. It's a little bit larger. It is one of the two mainstays of the Acura brand, and they've got a lot banking on this vehicle. Ben, you just drove it. What do you think?
I did. All new for 2014, I was hoping that it would look a little more daring in design than it does. It doesn't, for those who like the outgoing MDX, they're not going to at first see a whole lot of daring change in this new one.
Well, in Acura's defense, every time they try daring, we pretty much hate them for it.
That's true. Yeah. And then they go ahead and change it, and then we always like the original better. But they have punched up just luxury refinements a lot. They've done a lot in advanced noise reduction technology. There's an active noise reduction. The glass is thicker. There's thicker NVH materials all around. And they did get rid of the 41 buttons in the center there and
roosted
down to nine buttons and a touch feedback screen. And just daily user items like that. The second row seat now has a one-touch button that slowly folds and creates incredibly easy foolproof access to the third row.
It's
an illuminated button. It's really easy for even a small child to press it, and then it'll slowly slide forward so you don't knock the child out per se. But you know how you have a couple of levers these days on second row seats and you're all constantly pulling the wrong one? There's just one button and you're back there, and you can hit it from the back while you're in the third row. You can hit it from the back and it'll slide out of your way. You
and it works better than the fold and slide system that GM has on the Enclave and the Traverse, which worked great when we first saw it.
Yeah, until the Pathfinder came out. Yeah, Pathfinder kind of blew
it. It's the easiest I've seen. I mean, it's a real light touch. One touch. There's only one button. You can't mess it up. So,
Greg and Patrick, anything
to contribute? I've got a question for Ben. What do you think? What do you think of the V6 that they took out of the Accord?
Oh, the Earth Dreams V6. Mm. I am a big fan of that motor. Actually, it feels great. It's crisp. Of course, power's up and fuel economy's up, like you'd expect in an all new model. Drivability for MDX has always been a sporty utility, and that's definitely still there. You can select comfort, normal, and a sport mode, which really, really crisps up your throttle response and gives you pretty decent feel through the steering wheel, for sure. To answer your question, I'm a big fan of that motor. Although the numbers aren't a whole lot different horsepower-wise from the outgoing V6.
Didn't it actually go down?
I think it went down.
It then went down to like 290 or something like that.
Huh. Which is plenty for a midsize.
Yeah, but you know, everybody's like, I saw one comment like, with every new vehicle, its horsepower should never go down.
Well,
in that case, yeah, that's because it's infinite not all horsepower. That horsepower. Here
well, I mean, I wasn't driving 10/10ths and looking for that extra horsepower too, so I didn't really know. I mean, through improved maybe mapping of the trans and a new engine, it felt really good to me. Unlike a lot of vehicles in competition with that, you're not going to get that kind of performance out of them for the price they're asking.
Patrick?
I mean, yeah, I don't have much to say. I mean, the exterior design never really appealed to me, but I always know it has been a nice sporty drive, and I think maybe that's good enough for
it's bigger?
People.
Is it bigger? Yeah, same size?
Or it's a little bigger.
A little bigger?
A little longer.
Yeah, a little bigger here and there.
The one thing that always – they've had such a dilemma with this vehicle because it's always sold very well. But the two generations ago, a lot of owners complained it was too sporty. So then they made this outgoing model softer, and then they got the complaints that didn't work that well. So when you tell me that you thought it was sporty, yet it still had the comfort mode, that sounds like they may actually have got to where they need to be.
Yeah, they definitely listened to past complaints, and rigidity is boosted. They did all kinds of suspension geometry work to make sure that stiffness was added and not adding harshness. So it was luxury and stiffness all in one.
Was the all-wheel drive, is it still super handling all-wheel drive?
It is, yeah. It definitely is. And you can get it in front-wheel drive only now, too.
Which you never could get
before.
Yeah, that's a big move for them. Okay, Acura MDX. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thanks,
what was their
Ben.
Verdict? What was their verdict?
What is the verdict?
I would have liked to seen something a little more elegant in styling, maybe. Something that stood out a little more from...
More like the Infiniti.
Yeah, from the Infiniti JX.
Does it feel more high tech though at all, or is it just kind of bland inside, or what?
It doesn't strike me as a whole lot different inside. Definitely improved over there. I mean, the bank of buttons is gone, and that kind of everything is more touchscreen oriented now. So in that regard, it's more techy for sure. It's smarter inside.
For sure.
It's
good. Are you done?
No, that's fine. I want to cut you off.
Keep going.
Filling time, man.
Okay, so your verdict is, since he asked you for a verdict, so your verdict is
from inside the vehicle, it's a great change. From the outside, it's a change. Not as much of a change as I was looking for.
Right. Well, stay tuned. We'll have our full road test coming up on Motor Week shortly. And we have a chance to actually all have a chance to get at it. Let's move on now to our lightning round. Our panelists have 2 minutes to debate trending automotive topics. When time is up, they will hear the bell. And that will cut you off, by the way. All right, we've been following the muscle car wars for, as this says, years. How about decades? But it looks like pickup wars are really heating up. We were talking about the Sierra before. Since last year, all new versions of the Silverado and the Sierra, the Ram 1500 got major changes. Toyota Tundra has just been debuted with almost a total change. And, of course, the Ford Atlas concept of Detroit, which gives us a sneak peek at the next F-150 next year. Which pickup do you think will come out on top, and does all this competition benefit buyers? Let's talk about something other in sales. We know the F-150 is going to sell more than anybody else. But besides that, does anybody have an edge?
I'm going to step out and say that Ford has the edge as well, because they've been doing some pretty cool stuff with their pickups aside from just the bread and butter trucks. I mean, the Ford Raptor in years past, that was an incredible nobody else would dare to throw something like that out available, and that was awesome. I get a little flustered when I talk about the Raptor.
He just gets all giddy.
Yeah, I mean, he says it at the end. Does this competition benefit buyers? I mean, absolutely. That's the winner. I mean, these guys are constantly trying to outdo each other. Absolutely, we're the winners, for sure.
Greg?
Yeah. Competition is always good. I spent a lot of time in the Ram 1500. I did like that, with the exception of the dial shifter. But it was a solid truck, and then with the new Trans, is it the new Trans in the, mm-hmm. the 1500?
Yeah,
it actually got really good gas mileage. Yes, I think it was best for its
class.
It was
best in class for the
and with that V6, and the V6 really didn't feel underpowered for the truck you're driving. Mm-hmm. So real pleased with that.
Well, so you're getting really good fuel economy, and if you're a truck guy, it's reasonable to drive one of those instead of a car, maybe, because the fuel economy is what, low 20s. So why wouldn't you want more luxury in a truck if they're getting lower and lower fuel economy, more practical to drive on a daily basis?
Maybe it's just me, but see, I don't think that either that Ram and Chevrolet are going after Ford full force anymore. I think they've looked at it and said, they're going to be number one. They've got the truck that seems to appeal to most, to the broadest market. Let's concentrate where our strengths are. And the Ram is concentrating more on being a personal use vehicle with, you know, really going after a fuel economy strong and other things they've done to the truck, like the coil spring suspension in the back, to make it more of a weekender vehicle. It's not that it can't haul, but it no longer seems to challenge for the top tow and carrying capabilities. They leave that, I guess, to the heavy duties. And on the other hand, Chevrolet, with this new truck, and GMC by default, seems to be going after the working person. When I say that, I'm talking about things like the steps in the bumper, the hard tie downs on the cargo bed, the lights under the cargo rails, standard cargo rail caps. So I don't know, it's kind of interesting to me that maybe we're seeing some real division in the market we've never seen before.
And after all that, we still didn't talk about the Tundra, which
go
basically
ahead.
Oh, I don't know anything to say about
well,
it.
Well, you heard the bell.
You've seen it. You've seen the look of it. You know, it looks
it's just
more
a new
brutish.
Fish. Yeah, but it's
Do you think they've got a chance of becoming a big player?
I mean,
maybe in fleet usage. Maybe
there are plenty of people that buy them and love them, but I mean, it's still all about Ford and Chevy in this division.
Okay. We'll acknowledge that the bell rang and we should hush. Thanks, Michelle. Let's move on now to our Motor Week mailbag. Remember to submit your questions. If we choose your answer for the podcast, you'll win a fabulous Motor Week t-shirt. They are nice shirts. And we just ordered some more, right, Michelle? Ring the bell for yes. Thank you. Okay. Cal asks, my father and I have been able to come to an agreement on how – have not been able to come to an agreement on how the side view mirrors should be positioned. I say mirrors should be pushed out just past the point of where you can't see your vehicle in the inside portion of the mirrors. My father said you should position the mirrors to where you can see your vehicle in the inside portion of the mirrors. Can you help us settle this dispute? I'm not so sure.
Yeah, Go ahead. Don't do anything rash over this dispute because it comes down to personal preference. Like me personally, I like to see a little bit of my vehicle in the mirror.
However, on long-haul trips, I just recently went down to Myrtle Beach. On long-haul trips, in that 2 or 3 hours in, I see myself creeping my mirrors further out and getting rid of that body just because you really don't need it if you're doing 8 hours on the highway.
And you're also worried about people coming up beside
it. However, anytime else, I need to see a little bit in the
you've
back there.
You've also developed that reference of where you are after you've been on 95 for quite some time.
And there's motorcycles and stuff that you might get lost in that gap that you're making by
your blind
pushing
spot.
Them out a little more. Yeah.
Patrick, what's your preference?
Greg stole my answer, so just refer back to Greg. I like to see a little bit of my car.
Whatever works for you, man. There's no right or wrong. I mean, you can compromise, keep your vehicle on the left mirror, and keep it pointed out on the right.
If I'm in your blind spot, though, I'm going to want you to see a little bit of your car in your mirror.
I will join the fray and say I, for one, like to keep the mirrors out fairly far because I'm worried about myself starting to daydream and not seeing somebody in that blind spot.
I can attest, I've gotten in cars after you, and that right mirror is pointed way out there.
Like, it's not even just left it there.
Just even drive it.
Maybe just in case you wanted to drive it later, you didn't touch it.
Gosh. I get no respect.
Brian won't adjust a seat in the car. He's afraid to touch anybody's previous settings.
It's not true. Hurt their feelings.
We love each other here in Motor Week. Okay. Thanks very much, guys. That brings to a close our Motor Week podcast number 86. I'd like to thank our producer, writer, and two-wheeler reporter, Brian Robinson, for his always interesting comments. Our road test producer, Ben Davis, our writer, Patrick Lucas, and our assistant producer, Greg Carlos. I'd like to thank our audio engineer, Jim Bigwood, and our podcast creator, Bob Mixter, and our producer, Michelle Parker, the lady with the bell. And I have to tell you, folks, Michelle is one of the reasons we started these podcasts, and this is her last one. She has chosen to move on to greener pastures, and all of us at Motor Week wish her a very, very good future because she's been absolutely invaluable to us. And I just don't know where we're going to find somebody else that rings the bell just like you do.
But we are accepting applications.
Ruined perfectly good sentimental moment.
With several references.
And that's it for Motor Week's podcast. I'm John Davis. Be sure to catch us on public television stations and also on Velocity. Thanks for joining us at Motor Week.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. Motor Week is made possible by rockauto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at motorweek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.